Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
You're listening to Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast, the podcast edition. I'm here on Love Sport Radio every weekday morning at 6:30. This morning I was joined by the former Watford and England legend, Luther Blissey.
Good morning, Jamie.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know Caroline Flack, who hosts Love Island.
Yes.
Story about her. She splashed out over £1,000 on putting her dog up in a special hotel, and they get Evian water.
Yeah.
Tap water's not good enough for dogs.
My dog would drink water out the toilet. He doesn't care if it's tap water or mineral water.
My dog wouldn't drink it. Hates water. Hates
your
it.
Your dog hates
does not
water.
Like water.
What does your dog drink?
I've got to put honey in it.
Honey water.
You put honey in it and it loves it, then
God.
It's fine.
You are the Caroline Flack of the studio.
You know it is. You know it is.
Blimey.
Well, you must get through a lot of honey.
Yeah, you only put a little bit. You don't put too much. You don't want him getting diabetes, do you?
No, that's true.
No, that is true. Anyway, I've never done that for my dog. But £1,000 that Caroline Flack has spent.
And you get Harrods and Fortnum and Mason food cooked by a chef.
If you've got the money, why not? If you want to waste the money, why not? I don't care. It's her money.
Yeah.
You know, that's my feeling, really.
Country chic hotel for small dogs in Headley, Surrey.
Right. I mean, I don't care.
That's just... That
not going to be doing that to your dog?
No.
No, because I'm not an idiot.
Maybe
if somebody else wants to.
That's right. That's literally just somebody just going, I can do this.
Yeah.
And you do it.
Yeah.
You?
So therefore...
I can afford it, so why not?
I mean, I do think she should maybe give it to, you know, starving children or something. Or, you know, I don't know, animal charities, whatever. Mm. Something useful as opposed to just giving it to some country house. Hotel to put this thing up, but hey, it's her money.
Fair enough. Yeah. Buskers have been told to broaden their repertoires.
I've heard they played a montage of buskers all singing Wonderwall.
Yeah.
And it got a bit much, to be honest.
They do. They all do My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion.
Yeah.
Someone Like You by Adele.
Your heart will not go on if you keep playing that bleeding song, mate. I'm telling you. It's going to stop in a minute. Anything else? Celine Dion.
Yeah, Celine Dion, My Heart Will Go On. And Viva La Vida by Coldplay. Those are all buskers' favourites. And Kensington and Chelsea Council have said, look, we've had quite a few complaints that you don't have enough variety in your performances.
Quite a few people are complaining?
Yeah.
That busker's playing the same song again. I'm going to write to the authorities. Who are they writing to?
Well, they're writing to the council.
Yeah, I know, but is there like a department dealing with buskers' repertoire?
There obviously is.
There must
now.
Be, I guess.
Well, it says here that the Kensington and Chelsea Council have been flooded with complaints about the same song. And now buskers have to abide by a code of conduct. And they've got to develop a full and varied repertoire and be limited to playing for 45 minutes. Breaches of the rules carry a £1,000 fine. So you get, or £100 on the spot penalty.
£1,000 fine.
If you're caught playing My Heart Will Go On, then they slap you with an on the spot £100 fine.
Right, and £1,000 fine if you breach the rules.
Yeah.
And they might want to be taking your dog to a fancy hotel. And you can't, can you?
No, you can't.
Because the £1,000 has gone because you've been playing, I don't know, whatever
too
they play.
Too much Viva La Vida.
Too much Viva La Vida. Well, that is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But okay, fair enough. So people are getting upset by buskers in Kensington and Chelsea.
Yeah, they are. Ruby Walsh has retired.
Yes, more Cheltenham winners than anyone else. AP McCoy was on the TV earlier. I watched Sky Sports News when I left, talking about how he's the Lionel Messi of jockeying.
Yeah, that's what he said. Yeah, 25-year career. AP McCoy said to him, yeah, he's like Messi, genuinely had no weaknesses. He had the style and the strength, the temperament, the judge of pace, everything you want in a top-class sports person.
And AP McCoy is no slouch himself, as you said, Luther.
Absolutely.
Those are the two the big names, aren't they, in the modern era.
Yeah, and now they're both gone.
Yeah,
now shame. What?
I know.
They are the Messi and Ronaldo of jockeying.
They were.
Jockeying's not a word, is it? Well, it is a word.
Jockeying is a word, because you use it in football as
well. You do in football, that's true. Okay.
He rode Willie Mullins' horse yesterday.
At Punchestown. He won the
Punchestown Gold Cup, yeah, on Kenboy, who ran at Cheltenham. And then,
two Grand Nationals, two Gold Cups. More winners at Cheltenham than anyone else. Jockey, highest winning jockey 11 times at Cheltenham. I mean, really amazing. numbers.
Yeah, amazing stuff. And he said, well, he's supposed to be riding Live, Love, Laugh, which is another of Willie Mullins' horse, later yesterday in the 7.10. And then apparently he finished a race. He won the Punchtown Gold Cup. And he got off, and Willie Mullins said, he said to him, can you find someone else for Live, Laugh, Love? And Mullins said he was thinking, is he lame, concussed, or dehydrated? And then he just said, I'm out of here. And the penny dropped, and he realised that was him retiring.
And that was it? And there was no clue beforehand that he was going to?
No, no one knew. Shock news.
Yeah, you obviously made that decision. If I win this, I'm done.
I'm done.
Finish with a
nice way to go out.
That is a great way to go.
I'm leaving after the 7 o'clock news.
Depends how good it is.
It does. If this is a good section now, that's it for me. Love Sport. So joining us now is the former Liverpool keeper, Chris Kirkland. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, chaps. Okay.
Yeah, good. Thank you very much. Now, we were talking about that messy free kick. Rio Ferdinand, just as a passing comment, said that maybe the keeper could have done better, and I thought that was a little bit unfair on Alisson. Do you think any goalkeeper in the world saves that?
Oof, not very often, no. I mean, the thing is, when you put the ball down, you're thinking, I did the game last night for Sky. And when you put the ball down, you're thinking, it's a little bit far out. But then you see him standing over it, and you think, yeah, actually, he could put this in. Because he's probably the only one that can score that free kick. And the power he's hit it on as well, he's bent it around the wall, Alisson's got no chance.
No, that was certainly my feeling. I do wonder with keepers. Obviously, outfield players make plenty of comments about, goalkeepers should never be beaten at the near post. You sit there just sort of shouting at the telly when these sort of things have come out.
Well, listen, if a ball's hit hard enough and you know, it's in the right place, it doesn't matter if it's near post or, you know, yes, some near post ones, obviously. But it's, I think that's just Rio being a Manchester United player there. More than anything.
and I wanted to ask you about the wall as well. I mean, they put the wall up there, big guys as well. Is it almost better if they're 30 yards out not to have a wall so you can see which way he's going?
Well, this is the argument, isn't it? I mean, would it still strike if there wasn't a wall there? I mean, that's it. I mean, it takes somebody brave to not put a wall up, you know, just to mark. But that is the argument, because you do face shots in training from that distance where you haven't got a wall in, you know, when you're practicing as goalkeepers. So, but it's a big ask not to put a wall up, I think, because then if they do shoot and, you know, they it does go in, people will just say, well, you know, why are you not put a wall up there? That hits the wall if there's a wall there. So I don't think you can win either way.
Yeah, it's one of those things, Chris. I think the distance is one of the determining factors for me. I think from 30 yards, you can afford to maybe have a couple of people in the wall just to say, we just can't hit it straight down the middle. And then you know he's likely to go one way or the other with that. And then you can have your goalkeeper in his taker's position, and you can almost have somebody on the line on the other side to help protect that. I just think sometimes from that distance, it might be a thing just to say, go on then shoot. Because how often would anybody beat you from that distance, realistically?
Yeah, I mean, and as you say, if somebody's shooting from there, they're probably not going to hit it the way you hit it. They're probably going to go for more power, you know, on the laces. And I mean, but listen, that's not taking nothing away from the strike. I think there's only probably one, him and Ronaldo, that could probably do that.
Yeah.
From that distance, it was an incredible one to get his 600th goal like that. I mean, his 600th goal deserves something special, and that was special.
That's true. 600 is utterly ridiculous, isn't
it? That's not bad, is it, coming from a goalkeeper as well?
Yeah. That's fair enough. Is the tie over, do you think?
Well, it's never over. We know that from past games at Anfield. If Salah could have got that one at the end, obviously the away goal, it would have made things a lot more interesting. It still would be interesting. I mean, Liverpool have got to get a goal, definitely a goal before half time, and make sure Barca don't score. But yeah, it's going to be extremely tough. But you never say never in football. We've all been in it long enough to know, and especially with Liverpool's history coming back in games, especially in the Champions League. You just never know. But it's going to be some occasion, some atmosphere. One thing's for sure, the fans, you know, the Liverpool fans will be right behind them from the word go.
And in terms of the season itself, let's say that Liverpool end up with no trophies, and it, no shame in that, because, you know, if you get beaten by Barcelona in the Champions League and then Man City just keep winning, well, it's not like Liverpool have bottled it at all. I mean, Jürgen's had a great season, hasn't he?
They have. The players have as well. I mean, 97, that wins it. How many times out of the last how many years?
Well, every time except once.
Well, exactly. You know, Man City are an exceptional side. It's still not over yet. It's still tough. But somebody asked me this the other day and said it'll be devastating to lose it by 1 point. But you flip it around and you say, well, would you rather be 1 point behind them and then 15 points off Man City? you know, if it proves that you are closing that gap, you've given them an extremely, you know, run for their money. It's still not over yet. Anything can happen in the last two games. But, you know, the progression's there at Liverpool for everyone to see. They're an exceptional team. And as I said, they're still in two competitions yet. You just don't know what's going to happen in football.
No, quite. Thanks, Chris. Nice to speak to you.
No problem.
See you. Chris Kirkland there, the former Liverpool keeper. Yeah, I mean, do we get too wrapped up in they haven't won a trophy in how many years?
I think we do sometimes. You've got to take these things in perspective. And, you know, it was mentioned there that you've got Man City, who have no doubt about it being just exceptional the last couple of seasons. And for Liverpool still to be going, toe-to-toe with them at this stage of the season,
yeah,
and competing in the Champions League. Because, fate, remember, City have been out of it, and yet Liverpool has still been in that and still having to compete in the Premier League as well.
Yeah.
So it's been difficult for them, but they've stuck at it, and I think Liverpool will look back on the season, if they do end up not winning anything, they'll look back at those three games when they got draws. When, you know, sometimes you're better off losing one of them and winning, and even just winning and drawing one of them. You know, if you have a win, if they lose one, draw and win, suddenly there's no points gap, is there?
No,
they're going together.
They are level at that point, and yeah, that's true. Maybe, but it just feels like so long ago. That's certainly the time they will regret, if this is the case.
Yes.
But the truth is, you look at the records for the last 10, 12 games. I think City have won 9 or 10 in a row. Liverpool have.
No, I think they've won something like 13 in a row.
Maybe it's more than that now.
13 in a row, I think.
Liverpool have won 8 in a row. They were until last night, they were unbeaten in 19 games. Yeah. I mean, they're a phenomenal team.
That is a great record they've got. So, no, there's no shame in, or, you know, you'd be disappointed because of...
To get 97 points
and not win the league. Yeah. But, you know, it's one of those unusual times. It will not happen again.
No, I shouldn't think it will. Jamie has come in with some stories from inside the papers.
Yeah, I brought you the news yesterday that M&S have got rid of the gelatine from their Percy Pigs.
Yeah,
they've gone vegetarian.
Vegetarian Percy Pigs.
You partial to a Percy Pig, Luther?
Very partial.
Yeah, they are.
Like a Percy. They're a bit moorish, shouldn't they? You get one, that's nice. And then you just get, after that, it's just one of them.
Yeah. I've never eaten them.
Haven't you?
No, I've never had one.
No.
Yes. Unbelievable.
I'd have brought some in today if I'd known.
Yeah, but I don't want to eat a Percy Pig at this time of the morning. It's not exactly breakfast, is it?
Well, I suppose.
Oh, it can be.
Yeah, it can be.
It can be. That is true. But, okay, anyway, what about them?
Anyway, they've had a bit of a rethink.
After we spoke about it?
Yeah, they've listened to Love Sport. Yeah, well, the Sun had it as their front page yesterday.
Yeah.
And
because it's a proper newspaper.
Yeah.
And
they put a thing up on Twitter, and they got people to vote for whether they wanted to keep it meat-free or whether they wanted to go back to the old Percy. And 44%. Were in favour of keeping it meat-free. 35% wanted to go back, and 20% were on the fence. So it's a bit of a mixture. Excuse me.
It's all right.
A bit of a mixture. But
that was enough to make Marks and Spencer's change.
It's a good move to go. It's a good move to go that way with it.
Meat-free.
Yeah.
They're getting 100 Percy Pig fans now to decide whether to bring back the original recipe. They can line up these fans and give them one. Line them up. Give them one gelatine-filled one and one meat-free one.
Yeah.
And say, right, what do you reckon?
Have people not got jobs to do things
that sounds like a good
job.
But
that is their job.
What, to taste Percy
Pigs?
God's sake.
That would be a dream job.
Right.
They'll meet on May the 16th to discuss and vote on the sweet's future. Apparently.
Well, a very tense time waiting for that date.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll keep you posted on the results of that important test.
Yeah.
Luther, you were saying earlier that you put honey in your water for your dog to make him eat it.
Yeah.
Drink it. You won't drink.
How thick is that honey?
And you won't drink normal water. Well, actually, there's a story in the papers today. Apparently, consumers are being misled into thinking honey is a healthy alternative to sugar. According to campaigners, products with honey can contain up to 25 times more sugar than alternatives. And Action on Sugar says people add too much honey to food and drink, thinking that it's healthy.
Right.
Manuka honey is good for you.
What is it?
Manuka honey is very good for you, but it's unbelievably expensive.
I know, yeah. That's what he has.
Your dog, Manuka honey.
Well, just continuing on the theme of earlier, you know, on the...
Pampering the dogs.
Only the best honey for your dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Manuka honey is massively expensive. I mean, 30 quid for a jar, 40 quid, depending on the type you get. That's insane, that honey.
Is that what you get for your dog?
Yeah, well, it's the honey. It's what I buy. So if I'm having it, he can have it.
Yeah, it's only fair. Only right.
Member of the family, isn't
it? Anyway, the point is, it's full of sugar. You're actually making him unhealthy because it's very full of sugar.
No, no, no. He only has one little bit each day. And literally, it's on you. Then just stir it in it just so you can taste. No, it doesn't taste like water then. And he's fine. Strange dog.
No doubt about that.
But French bulldogs are strange dogs.
Are they?
They are very peculiar.
Is it moody?
Dogs. Yeah. Not moody at all. They're just very peculiar. I'm sure they don't know they're a dog.
Right.
They think they're something else.
Sounds ridiculous. It's honey-eating dog.
Have you ever met one, you would know exactly where I'm coming from.
I've never met a French bulldog. Anyway, to the story, which is...
Well, that, I could... actually,
which is the actual fact that honey
six
is...
6 grams of sugar.
No healthier than just sugar.
Yeah, if you put a teaspoon of honey in your tea, that adds about 6 grams of sugar. But a teaspoon of table sugar is only 4 grams, less dense.
I had a friend of mine who gave up sugar for about a month. And said it was amazing to her when after about a week and then somebody and she had a tiny taste of cake.
It is ridiculous
and
how sweet
said
it is.
It was so sweet. Yeah. She couldn't get over how sweet things are.
Yeah.
And how much sugar is added all the time.
Yeah.
It's quite good if we can stop all that stuff. White death, as they called it. My mother used to call it.
Yeah, right.
All right.
Well, speaking of death, pensioners are apparently happier.
I can't believe you actually put those two together.
Do you know, we're close to pension age. You know?
Yeah, that's why I can
Luther
say it.
Closer than
I
me,
can say but... it because I'm amongst pensioner friends.
Yeah. He's a nice young man, isn't he? Isn't he a nice young man? What about it?
We found out what makes them most happy. Can you guess what it is? What
pensioners? Another day alive. Is that what it is?
It's not that. It's actually free bus passes.
Well, I suppose. Is that, you know what, you can get a bus for free. It's quite nice free travel.
Yeah, nice little extras, Brucey bonuses. Linked to...
the twirlies, aren't they? The twirlies, I told you this.
Oh, yeah.
They turn up at 9:30, 9:20 they turn up. Am I twirly? And they call them twirlies, right? So, free bus passes, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, this is a
proper
study by UCL. Right. University to determine what exactly in a pensioner's life makes them most happy, and they found that there's a real link between free bus passes and happiness in older
Do you know
people.
What else I think makes you happy? Lack of ambition. I think you get to a certain point in your life when you give up, and I think that will probably make you happier.
Well, you completed everything you wanted to complete.
You've done what you need to do. You can't be chasing young men or women about. You're just not capable. You know, you
some of them still try.
Some you might still try, but it's just not going to happen. I think there's a general feeling that you're done. And at that point, I think you're probably quite happy.
Yeah.
You're not pushing too hard.
Yeah. What age do you have to be to get a free bus pass?
60, I believe it is, isn't it? 60. Luther's there.
I'm there,
have you got
son.
One, Luther?
I'm there.
I thought you were happy.
Yeah, he came by happy. Bus this morning.
Always
cost
happy.
Cost him nothing.
Had to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. Well, no, 4 o'clock in the morning.
On the night bus.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the truth is, as a pensioner, that's what time he would normally get up. They all get up about four in the morning.
You do.
And then sit in a chair and fall asleep. That's the way it generally works.
This is Love Sport.
Caster Semenya lost a landmark case against the IAAF. Apparently, this is athletes with differences of sexual development, like Semenya, will now have to take testosterone suppressants to compete in certain events. Well, as we're talking about that, let's have a chat with the assistant sports editor at the Eye, Matt Butler. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning.
This ruling by the IAAF. I mean, Caster Semenya says it's basically an infringement on her human rights. Do you agree?
I do, and the Court of Arbitration for Sport is discriminatory.
Oh, I think we'll try and get Matt back there. It's a slightly bad line. We'll give it another go and hopefully get him straight back and talk about this. I mean, we've talked about this morning.
We have.
I feel like I could argue it both ways, really, because it's not fair on her. It absolutely is not fair to force somebody to take drugs when they're not ill. Let's be fair, they're not ill. I think Matt's back now. Matt, are you there?
I am.
Yeah, hello, Matt. So I asked about her human rights, and you would agree that it is an infringement on her human rights.
Well, not only I agree, the Court of Arbitration for Sport said it was discriminatory as well.
In fact, they did say it was discriminatory, but they said it was necessary discrimination because it's unfair on the other athletes.
Where are you going to push this? Is it unfair on the rest of the 100-metre sprinters that Usain Bolt was 5 inches taller or had a longer stride?
Well, there's nothing you can do about that, is there? Whereas this, you can actually do something about.
you can by altering her body. I mean, it is an infringement on her human rights. She was born that way. So who are we to say that she has to take drugs to lower her testosterone levels?
Sorry, Luther, you were going to say?
Yeah, I was saying, but it's because of the ruling about the level of testosterone that women are allowed in their blood, isn't it? That's the reason why it's become such a big issue.
Mm.
You know, so that's why it's got, I mean, I personally, you know, and Ian, we've been discussing this morning, and it is, as you said, both ways you could argue, and you still, it still doesn't seem right whichever way you go around it.
I know, it's all been handled so, so terribly as well.
It's not great. Sorry, Matt, go on.
You have to feel it for Caster. She's had to put up with us for 10 years or so.
Quite. She does take it. She does feel it's a very personal thing. Let's bring in Sharon Davis, former swimmer and Olympic silver medalist. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning.
Morning.
The same. I haven't heard all of the conversation before because I've only just joined, but I do empathise with Caster. This is an incredibly difficult situation for her. However, there is always going to be a first person that this has to happen to, so that we can put guidelines in place to try and protect female sport. And you know, I still don't think this goes far enough. I think we need to have chromosomes in place. I think this needs to be about XX females, which is 50% of the world, just deserve the equal opportunity to win races, get scholarships, be selected for teams, and create careers, you know, from that success.
I mean, from her point of view, would you have been happy to take drugs when you're not, let's say, ill as such? Would you have been happy to inject drugs or whatever however you take them in order to compete in the sport that you love?
But that's not the point, is it? The point is, if she wants, she doesn't have to take drugs. No one is saying you have to take drugs. What Cass is saying and the IAAF is saying is that if you wish to compete with females, because you are a biological male, she is XY, and you have raised testosterone levels, which sadly, because she has DSD, was not recognised when she was born because she was visually checked and not medically checked, you have to reduce your testosterone levels by taking a drug to do so. If you don't wish to do that, you don't have to do that. You can go and compete with other people that are XY. So you know, everyone keeps saying she has to take drugs. She doesn't have to take drugs. This is her choice if she wishes to compete with women. And I come from the perspective that I am a female. I competed against East Germans that were full of drugs for 20 years. Nobody had absolutely anything about it. And a whole generation of females lost out on their medals. And I don't want the same thing to happen again. You know, we have a real issue in women's sport at the moment with records falling to people who carry a Y chromosome. Now, if we're not careful, in 10 years' time, the men's world records will be held by males and the women's world records will be held by people who identify as women but carry the Y chromosome. So women will be obliterated from female sport. It's crazy.
Matt, what's your response to that? That basically women with two X chromosomes are basically being sidelined in these particular events?
Sport is inherently unequal.
Matt, come on. The biggest marker is chromosomes, which is XX and XY. The next biggest marker is testosterone. If you talk about the length of your arm, the height, the size of your feet, so on and so forth, those things come down to tiny percentages, whereas chromosomes are 99.98% correct and testosterone is 99.9% correct. They're miles ahead with regards to differences than just someone's size. You know, and if you're very honest, you know damn well that if you look at the final of, I don't know, let's say the women's 100 freestyle at the Olympic Games, because obviously I know swimming, everybody in that race is the same height, the same length of arms, with the same roughly the same size feet. They've all got to that point with roughly the same biological advantages of that particular sex. So all we're saying as women is we would like sport, which was very much reliant on biology, to be based on sex. That's
Matt,
what I mean to say, that anyone can identify as they want to.
Matt, I mean, do you think in the future, I mean, let's say that this ruling is upheld and Caster Semenya either has to take testosterone suppressants or compete a longer distance, do you think in the future people will be looked at, children will be looked at much earlier and they won't be allowed to compete in particular events because of high levels of testosterone?
It's worryingly likely, and it's desperately sad that it would come to this, because Caster Semenya identifies as a woman. There isn't as conclusive evidence that raised testosterone levels is a performance enhancer. I mean, it's a contributing factor, as scientists have said.
Yeah.
But the IAAF research was flawed, according to scientists. It's one contributing factor, but there is no dose-response relationship between raised testosterone and a definitive advantage.
But, Matt, do you not think, as Sharon says, that there's a generation of girls and young women who will actually be discouraged from competing in particular events because they go, well, what chance have I got?
I don't think so.
Really?
I mean,
Sharon, would you have gone? I'm not competing if there's going to be people who are just going to be 10 meters better than me.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, women's to male performance is 8 to 12% lower.
Yeah.
And in some power events, there is 20% difference. You know, sprints and powerlifting, weightlifting, so on and so forth. So there is a massive difference, a massive benefit that having testosterone in your system, particularly through puberty, makes to your body. And this isn't just about testosterone. This also includes your lung capacity, your red blood cell up count, your denser bone structure. There are so many other biological things which give a male an advantage, regardless of testosterone.
But she's a woman, Sharon.
So one by...
She is a woman. She identifies as a woman. She was declared a
but
woman
she's not
at birth.
Female. She's not female. She's not XX. And my point is that XX should have the same rights. 50% of this world is XX. Why should we not have the same human rights to have a level playing field as men do?
Matt, Sharon, we're going to have to let you go. Thanks very much for joining us. That's Matt Butler, their assistant sports editor at the Eye, and Sharon Davis, former swimmer and Olympic silver medalist. This stuff is so difficult.
It is difficult. Very complicated.
It is. And I feel,
from both sides, as you say, you'd think yourself, but she's literally caught in the middle of all of this.
And it does feel very personal because she is the poster girl for this argument for or against. And I think in the future, maybe the identification, and as Sharon Davis said, they're talking about chromosomal identification earlier down the line, so that they actually say to her, well, look, this is the way it is. You, because of the way your particular body makeup, you're not going to be able to compete in these particular events. It's not that you can't be an athlete. Just you can't compete in these particular events because it gives you
an unfair advantage. Yeah.
And that's what will happen in the future. But right now, for Caster Semenya, that is going to be no consolation.
This is Love Sport.
What you got, Jamie?
Yeah, the law is going to protect police in...
The law.
They're thinking of basically bringing in a new test, basically to protect police officers who are involved in high-speed chases and then might get in an accident. Mm-hmm. To allow them to not feel like they can't hit someone. It's not so much about hitting moped drivers, but at the moment they have to basically follow the same standards as a normal driver. I mean, obviously you're allowed to drive quicker if you're in a police chase and stuff, but afterwards when
I was going to say that'd be difficult. Slow down. Yeah. I keep going over the speed limit, for goodness sake. I can't keep up.
Yeah, exactly. But at the moment officers are subject to the same standards of driving as members of the public.
Well,
yeah,
now,
they're going to be judged on the actual driving test that they have to do, qualified to be a police pursuit driver.
Yeah, they're going to look into the qualifying that they've done,
right,
and whether that means that they were able to take this corner at that speed, that sort of stuff, which I think is quite right. I mean, I saw something the other day that even though the Met have said that police are now able to knock off moped thieves off their mopeds, that even now still some are being prosecuted and police are still unwilling to do that because they're worried they're going to be prosecuted.
I find this difficult. I mean, on the one hand, these moped thieves, there is a bit of the visceral side of me goes, yeah, knock them off, don't care. Don't care if they get hurt. Couldn't care less. But because they are thieves and they shouldn't be doing it. But
and
on the other hand...
And the things that they do as well. I mean, they've got no worries about threatening people with hammers and all the various things that they
agree.
Do. I say flatten them, no worries about it.
Well, that is... But you know what? I'm glad that we're not making laws. Because in the end, the police can't act in the same way as criminals. They can't. Which is what we're essentially they can do.
But they know before they go out and threaten someone with a hammer and try to steal someone's phone, make people's lives miseries. They know that they can get away with it just by simply taking off their helmet and drive away.
I understand the argument.
So stop doing it. Stop doing it and then you won't get knocked off your moped.
And of course, if the police managed to kill one, then that might act as a deterrent. But the death penalty doesn't work, does it? So maybe it won't. I mean, I don't know.
One broke his leg the other day and the police officer who was driving the car is being investigated, which means they're still reluctant to knock them off because they know. And what if you're a police officer, why would you do that? You think, well, it's not worth the risk.
Yeah.
Yes, I can stop this moped.
And let them get away, because the thing with moped is once they get... You're never going to see them again. They can just quickly go wherever and you lose them.
And then you don't have to go through the stress in your own life as a police officer who's under investigation. All that. It just makes it easier for you. You think, oh, I won't knock him off.
I understand the point you're making.
But I'm all in favour of them doing it.
Right, okay.
I think it should be encouraged. I'm not a moped thief, so I'm fine with it.
No, but you're not in the minority either. I think most people are in favour of it, but there's certainly people who've said otherwise, and I understand why.
Moped thieves in their spare time, them
and,
a lot.
And Diane Abbott as well, yeah. And various other people. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Go on.
Until it happens to them.
Until it happens to them, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Are we talking earlier, you were chatting with Martin just then, about songs at funerals.
Yes.
And hymns have become, well, hymns are the traditional thing to sing at funerals, but more and more people are saying, nah, we don't want a hymn, especially funerals that aren't at churches.
What's the difference between a hymn and a psalm?
And a psalm?
Yeah.
Don't really know. What's a psalm?
A psalm, like psalms in church. Oh, you get psalms.
But you don't sing a psalm, though, do you? I don't think so.
Okay.
Well, I don't really. That sort of stuff. No. I can tell you about the songs, though.
Oh, what are the songs?
Well, Ed Sheeran, Supermarket Flowers is one. Yeah. Westlife, You Raise Me Up. Yeah. Those are two very popular songs to be played at funerals.
Yeah. That's sort of a presumption there, isn't there, about heaven?
Yeah.
As a don't bring me down.
Yeah.
Would obviously be, because you're a bit of a bad boy. Down, down, deeper and down. Status quo. Yeah. Stairway to Heaven. You want to play those sort of things.
Yeah.
You know, when I used to do hospital radio, there were all sorts of songs you couldn't mention death.
Really?
Stairway to Heaven, Three Steps to Heaven. You know, he's going in for an operation. Don't play the first cut, he's the deepest. They get a bit funny about that. It's not even a joke. We used to have a list of all these songs we weren't allowed to play on hospital radio because the patients might die.
Well, the patients might think, well, that might encourage them to die, or they might think, oh.
Well, no, they think, well, I'm on death's door. I can't believe he played Three Steps to Heaven.
Yeah.
It's outrageous. But anyway, what other tunes?
Other ones, Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Oh, please. Really?
Time to Say Goodbye.
Yeah, I suppose. Every time.
But top of the list.
Top of the list was Happy Talking, Talking, Happy Talk. We never liked him. No, wasn't it?
It wasn't that. It was Frank Sinatra's My Way.
That's such a rubbish song as well. I love Frank, but that is terrible.
Not his best.
No, it's one of his worst, I would suggest. My Way. I mean, really? Did you do it your way? You worked in accounts for 45 years. Is that your way?
Lord is my shepherd and Abide With Me were the most popular hymns.
I like Abide With Me. I do like it at the cup final. It's a break from all the techno music they play at Wembley before every game. Yeah, and they shout at people, make some noise. You know, I can't make any noise. I can't hear a thing.
Bring back the hymns at Wembley, you're saying.
Abide With Me is great before it's a cup final. You've experienced that.
Brilliant.
Lovely, lovely moment. I really do. I like singing along. I have to look at the words on the sheet. I still don't know it. But it's nice to sing along.
Yeah.
All right, what else you got?
The Thai rescued boys in the cave, they're going to get £72,000 each. Well, their families are, because they're going to be part of a Netflix film. And basically, negotiations were ongoing between the Thai government and Netflix. Apparently, they were playing... They were trying to sort of make sure they could get as much as they could.
$72,000 each.
And they haven't released how much the government's going to get, but they said the boys are going to get £72,000 each.
Why the government get?
The government going to get anything? Are they?
Why the government getting? Luther is winking there. Why are the government getting money?
Because they're the ones who did the bargaining with Netflix.
Oh, I see. Right. So they've done a little
taking a bit of money.
Deal.
They're the agent. Well, they're the agent, aren't they? So the agent gets their cut.
15%.
It'd be more than 15%.
And the boys had to be in a cave for whatever it was, 14 days before they were rescued. And then when they were rescued, they had to go and sit and watch Man United when Jose Mourinho was managing. Haven't they suffered enough? And Elon Musk in his little mini submarine trying to rescue them.
It was some plan, wasn't it, to do that so they could get a film at the end of it. It's good thinking, wasn't
it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's worked out very well.
They've done right out of it.
Do you think it'd be a good film? Do you think it'd be a good film, really? Trapped in a cave for 16 days?
Yeah, Hollywood make a film about anything.
I think it'd be quite good,
I guess they do the backstory with the families and all the rest of it, worrying about their little Thai fella.
Well, they make films about all sorts. Now people stuck in a phone box for however long, don't they?
True. You're absolutely
right.
What's
that film?
Phone Box, isn't it? Colin Farrell. I think it was called Phone Box. Or Stuck in a Phone Box.
Stuck in a Phone Box.
Or Engaged or something.
All right. So I think that'd be quite a good film. Anyway, they're making 72 grand each. So, and in Thai money, that's probably a lot.
You know what? They earn less than we do, so they're doing okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
A sad story coming from Greece, actually. A girl is in a critical condition because she was hit by a stray bullet, which was fired from a third of a mile away in a celebration. What they do is they fire bullets in the air, and it's illegal to do so, but they do it at a lot of celebrations that are quite popular in Greece. And so this bullet went up in the air and obviously landed a third of a mile away.
And hit this girl.
Hit this girl. I always wonder, you know, when they fire stuff up in the air, normally it's just blanks, isn't it?
I have no idea. What I see? Quite often you see these wars going on quite often in the Middle East, and there's men firing guns and they're firing them up in the air in celebration. But you think, what happens?
You always think,
birds?
Where do they land?
Where do they land? Well, on occasion they obviously land in or on little girls, a quarter of a mile away. What were they doing it in Greece for? What were they celebrating?
It was an Orthodox Easter party.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she was 62 miles west of Athens. She collapsed in her garden after being hit. He faces charges of causing grievous bodily harm and possessing an unregistered firearm, and it's illegal to fire actually bullets up in the air. So
stupid, isn't it?
Unbelievable.
What a stupid thing to happen.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
That person should be beaten around the face.
I'm not sure if they do that in Greece, maybe. Maybe that's what it'll get.
I'm sure that's unorthodox as well, but I'm sure they'll do that.
And finally,
Esther.
Might have a new...
Do you understand that?
Yeah, Esther Ranson, isn't it?
That's right.
Well done.
Yeah, very good. Very much.
I'm surprised you know that, but that would have been before you were born, well before you were born.
Gives that her gold stars, doesn't she?
Esther Ranson once got me to propose to my girlfriend live on the radio.
Oh, yeah, you did, didn't you?
Yeah,
you were forced into it.
Oh, I was.
You backtracked.
Well, we're not married, so she said no. She phoned in the show.
Did she say no live on air?
No, she didn't say no live on air. When I got home, she went, don't be ridiculous.
Ain't going to happen, all right.
No. Anyway, what about it?
Anyway,
finally.
German teenager has been hailed as one of the most exciting prospects in chess. He basically fended off Magnus Carlsen, who's a 28-year-old current grandmaster.
Yeah. Is he the male model... chess master, Magnus Carlsen?
Is he the one?
He's a good looking,
right,
charismatic chess guy.
Right, is he? Well, this German teenager, he's 14 years old, and he basically took him quite the distance. They went for nearly 7 hours. He managed to fend him off.
Right.
And that's quite impressive in chess terms.
Okay.
Carlsen.
They were playing chess, right? He was just making advances at him.
No.
Okay.
Carlsen, who's 28 years old, the current grandmaster, he tried to provoke Vincent into a stray move with a risky strategy known as the Benoni defence.
Oh, the Benoni defence.
Classic.
Love the Benoni defence.
Yeah.
Was doing that the other day. Yeah. There's a picture of him here. We've got a picture of Magnus Carlsen. He's not a bad looking guy.
He's not bad looking. He's not as good looking as I thought he was going to be after you built him up, to be
he's
honest.
He's the best looking chess bloke there's ever been, all right? Love sports. Let's have a little chat with the former Liverpool midfielder, Ray Houghton. Good morning, Ray.
Morning, boys.
Morning.
Morning,
Ray. So, I thought Liverpool played well last night. Didn't really deserve to be on the end of a 3-0 defeat.
Yeah, I think for 75 minutes, I'd agree with you. But then, when they gave away the second goal, it worried me slightly because, you know, I've been saying all day, you've got to keep your focus when you're playing Barcelona. You can't have basic mistakes. And if you looked at the back line where they were for the second goal, they were all over the place. You know, allowed Sergio Roberto to get in behind them. Bit of good fortune when the ball comes to Suarez. He improvised, didn't he, with his kneed onto the bar. But even if you look at it again, just go back in it, when he kneed it towards the bar, Virgil van Dijk's
didn't
right
react.
Beside Lee.
Yeah.
He doesn't react. That's the difference. Listen, I'll tell you, that is a strike. You're thinking it might come off the crossbar.
Yes.
You're thinking the positive, whereas the defender's probably thinking, oh, that's got to go over. We're safe. That's the difference. He's acting on it. He's reacting to it, Virgil van Dijk. And before you know it, it's in the back of the tuna. And then they lost the discipline completely. You know, it was as if they just said, right, we're not going to defend now. We're just going to go all out. We're going to try and get a goal to get it back to 2-1. Give away a needless free kick, Fabinho coming in and barging Messi out the way, and then you get punished with it, and he curls one into the top corner, and it could have been 4 or 5.
Yeah.
You know, they had, two 3-on-1s, which they never really made the best use of, and then Dembele in the end. Well, I mean, what an opportunity he missed to make it 4.
Yeah.
And then between that, you had Salah when he hits the post to get it back to 3-1. I mean, it was a crazy game. I thought it was a really good game of football. I thought Liverpool played really well, surprised me with their tactics and what they tried to do, you know, pressed them, won the ball back. I thought quality-wise in the first half, it was excellent. But Liverpool came out really well in the second half. But it's about seeing it through for the 90 minutes.
It is.
You come away with a 1-0 defeat, you know, you see it's still hard to take, but we're well in it. 3-0, I'm not sure, lads, we can see them turn it around, can we?
Yeah, don't you think so? I mean, I personally think they've still got a chance, but it's not scoring that goal could come back to haunt them, is my thought on it. But just going back to the free kick, Messi's free kick, I mean, we've said it here this morning. Do you think sometimes from 30 yards out you need to actually put a big wall up, or do you take a gamble and put in a couple of people there so he can't just hit it straight?
Luther, you know, you know what? You could be right. I mean, I had that argument yesterday. What do you do? You know, do you have no wall? I mean, do you have one in the wall so you can have a good view of it? I mean, if you see it again, though, it goes like 2 or 3 yards outside the post.
It's ridiculous, yeah. And then dips below the crossbar in the last bit of the flight.
Sometimes you just got to put your hands up. I mean, I learned a great lesson under Jack Charlton. He used to say, you know, a goalkeeper, put your wall up. They will defend that side of the goal. You defend the other. If the ball goes over the wall and into the back of the net, it's not your fault. If it goes in this, your side, it is your fault. Make sure you're prepared for that. And then if you hold your hands up, just say sometimes it's a magnificent free kick. But what led to the free kick is, you know, ill discipline.
Yeah.
Going in and barging someone out the way, because at that stage, Liverpool were a little bit lost. And, you know, that worried me the last 15 minutes. So ragged they got. You know, they went from a team that I thought for half an hour in the second half, dominated possession, had 3 chances, you think of. Milner had 2 good chances, and Salah 1. Keeper makes 3 very good saves to Stegen, and then you lose your discipline, you lose your focus, you're not professional, and then you get 2 goals going in, and it looks like the tie's over. Can you listen, honestly say that you can see Liverpool turn around to the manner where you can't see, because that's what it's got to be. You can't see Barcelona scoring. If
well,
they
that's,
get 1, Liverpool
yeah,
need 5.
Well, that's the thing. Liverpool, that's the problem. Liverpool, you think they will concede again. But I can see Liverpool scoring 3 goals, no doubt about it.
Yeah, but I can just see Barcelona getting a couple as well. Yeah. I mean, in the end, is Lionel Messi, is that world-class player? Is he just the difference quite often in games like this? If you're looking at the two teams, there's not a lot between them. But Lionel Messi is just better than everyone else.
Yeah, well, I said yesterday, 2 things worried me. There was a seed of doubt that was planted in my head all day yesterday before I was doing the game. That was, 1, Suarez hadn't scored a Champions League goal. He hadn't scored all season. I mean, that's incredible. Someone of his ability, and have a look what he's done in the Spanish League again this season. Have a look at his record in the Champions League when he's played for Barcelona. He always scores. The fact that he hadn't was niggling away in my head. I'm thinking, tonight.
Yeah, he did score against Man United. He did score against United.
No, well, it was an own goal. It was actually an own goal.
No, it was an own goal.
They gave it own goal. Correct, yeah.
That's his first Champions League goal, Luther, yesterday.
That's outrageous, isn't it?
He had scored before that. But his movement again was
unbelievable.
He is.
And there's no one better at the moment than him doing that.
And the other thing I'm guessing is Lionel Messi.
Yeah, but I'm saying for getting across people, you know, if you've seen the starting position, he was on the right-hand side, the left of Liverpool. He was quite close to Virgil van Dijk. He anticipates that Jordi Alba's got to put the ball into where he did. He gets between the 2 centre-halves. It didn't look like there was enough room to get between Matip and van Dijk. He made the run, inch-perfect cross, gets there ahead of Alisson, a deft touch, takes into the back net. That was top-quality work from a striker. That is people who are attuned to your fullback is going to deliver the ball in to an area that you can affect the game. I thought it was just excellent football. It was a major part for Barcelona because it gave him that momentum and confidence and belief, and certainly for Suarez, who looked up for it. Just wonder what sort of reception he's going to get next Tuesday at Anfield, because I don't think he endeared himself to the Liverpool fans with some of his antics last night, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm not sure he cares that much, Ray. I think he's probably okay with it. Ray, we'll let you go. Nice to speak to you.
Cheers, lads.
See you soon, Ray. Ray Houghton there, former Liverpool midfielder. I mean, in the end, sometimes you just got to hold your hands up and go, listen, we didn't take our chances. And at the other end, we got clinically punished.
I think that's Jürgen Klopp's, that's his view of it. You know, we had our opportunities, we didn't take it. They took theirs. And I think he just needs to turn around on the next one. You know, in the next game, that's how it needs to be on Tuesday night.
But that's what I was saying to you. As much as I think Liverpool will get goals at Anfield, I cannot see Liverpool getting three and stopping Barcelona scoring. I can't. Even if they go to extra time, probably end up 4-1. There's no doubt you can get goals against this Barcelona team. Mm-hmm. Although not many people do, but you can get goals against him if your attacking is sharp enough and you take your chances. But yeah, to stop them scoring...
what will stop them scoring? I mean, if they suddenly... Liverpool suddenly get a couple of early goals on them, then I think we'll see really what this Barcelona team is really made of.
Can they
then battle through and then, you know, get that goal that will get them, that will secure the tie for them?
I mean, I believe they will go through, but if Liverpool do turn it around, it'd be one of the greatest comebacks in the history of the Champions League.
If Liverpool get an early Champions four goals.
Yeah, if Liverpool get an early four goals, yeah, and then they just hold them at arm's length for the rest of the game. Yeah, that could happen as well. What you got, Jamie?
When you die, not that it'd be soon.
On stage or in real life?
In real life.
Okay.
Hasn't happened yet, but what do you want to happen to yourself?
What do I want to happen?
Do you want to be cremated? Do you want to be buried?
I'm actually not that bothered. I haven't really given it a lot of thought. I'll be honest with you.
Luther? Which is best for the environment?
That's a point.
I don't know actually.
Every time I say cremate me, please.
I'd also, by the way, like to give my organs up for donation.
Yeah, that same.
All that stuff. But I'm not actually bothered. What about you? Do you think about this?
I think I'd rather be buried than burnt.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, you'd be dead, so it doesn't hurt.
I'm not too bothered. In that case. But in that case, kept me in the fire.
They don't burn you alive, as far as I understand it.
I'm not too bothered. I mean, if someone said, no, you have to be cremated, I'd say, all right, okay.
Now,
but if I had the choice, which we do, I'd say I'd rather be buried.
All right.
Really? And then go to heaven.
Just think of all that space that you're taking up.
Well, yeah, but that's it. Well, this chap, Steve Munt from Oregon, he's hosting a crowdfunding campaign. He wants to send his cat's ashes to space.
Really?
Yeah.
Right.
He wants to send them by rocket. And he says...
As opposed to how? Bus? Space bus?
Yeah, true. I suppose that is the only way.
Rocket is essentially the only way.
Yeah, and he says a portion of his remains from his heart will be launched into orbit where he'll watch over the Earth and we can track his location as he showers the world with love. I don't know who's going to be paying for his cat to be...
He's crowdfunding it. If you want to get involved, is there
People will do it.
People will pay.
Oh, yeah, great. Let's send Steve's cat to space.
I don't know, $5 or something might be a laugh.
You're going to help Steve out?
No, of course I'd say
send Steve himself.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, it's nice. I wouldn't mind being sent to space. That'd be quite nice. Something of me to end up orbiting around the galaxy, the universe for the rest of time.
Once you're dead, you mean?
Once I'm
dead. Like a limb.
Right, yeah. A limb.
A limb.
What's that leg doing in the spaceship? Oh, that's Stony. Yeah, he paid for that to go on here. Yeah. Yeah, he died years ago.
Not? Good luck to Pikachu. We'll have to see.
Well, is that the name of the cat?
Yeah, I think it's already dead, actually.
Pikachu.
So no point wishing it luck now, but.
For God's sake. Yeah. Isn't that a.
Pokemon.
Pokemon. Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I'm not. Yes.
All right. Steve. Well, listen, mate, if you hadn't spent all that money on Pokemon cards, you could afford to pay for the rocket yourself, to be perfectly honest. Because my kids were into Pokemon for a while, and those cards are expensive.
Yeah.
Every day we'd be in it. Well, another packet. We spent £8 on that yesterday. Mm. Outrageous. Anyway.
I saw one at school for £1 to Gemma Cooper, and I had to give her the £1 back the next day because she told her parents. I thought it was a good bit of business. It's one of the most rubbish cards.
Right. You ripped off Gemma Cooper.
Yeah, but it's supply and demand, isn't it?
No sale. What did you get? I've got a receipt. I'm sorry. Yeah, sold as seen.
I still haven't got over that. Hard done by. Should have been able to keep my £1. But
Gemma Cooper's parents. Oh, they're not having it.
This is Love Sport.
You pride yourself on your sense of smell, don't you?
I know what he's saying there, and I understand why he's saying it. I do have an acute sense of smell.
Yeah, you said that before. Yes. That's all I'm saying.
And that's all you need to say. I understand the point you're making.
But that could actually be a good thing in older age, because they've tested people's sniffing power, and they found that if you have a bad sense of smell when you're older, you're 50% more likely to die in the next 10 years.
What, if there's a gas leak or something?
That's obviously what it must be.
Well, that must be one of them.
50% more likely to die in the next 10 years if your sense of smell isn't very good, because you might miss something that requires a sense of smell, like a gas leak, or just because...
Not that.
To do with that. Right.
No.
What if your flesh is decaying and you can't notice it?
You can't smell the fire.
You can't smell the fire or whatever it is. Not to do with that.
No, it's not to do with that. No, it's
what
not.
What is it?
It's more just a sort of, just a, a thing that they found out. Oh, he can't smell.
It's like an indicator that that something
things ain't right.
Isn't quite right there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm in luck then.
Yeah.
Blessed are the big noses.
Well, at the moment you're in luck.
Yeah.
Although, yeah, it could that take could a change. Turn for the worse as you get older.
Take a turn for the worse. Why? Yeah. On the other hand, you're more likely to bump into something. Because your nose is just out in front of you. Yeah. You could hurt yourself.
Well, they
swings around a bit.
Professor Chen, who did this study, said, yeah, we don't have a reason for more than 70% of the increased risk. We need to find out what happened to these individuals. Mm? Poor sense of smell is known as an early sign for Parkinson's disease and dementia and is associated with weight loss. However, those conditions only explain 28% of the increased risk, leaving most of it unexplained.
Right. So there's all sorts of stuff we don't know.
All you know is if you start to be unable to smell stuff, then you just panic, really.
Watch out.
Yeah, watch out.
Okay, fair enough.
So that stress doesn't play any part in it then, no?
What, the stress of...
Of now knowing that if you can't smell something, you're likely to die very soon.
Well, now it will be, I suppose.
Well, now that we know, that's true. Well, I wish we hadn't said it now.
Should have kept the mouth shut. Anyway.
Okay.
The Indian Army have found proof of the Yeti, apparently. They were in the Himalayas.
That's what they should be.
Yeah. And it's the part of Nepali folklore, the old Yeti.
Yeah.
And they...
You old Yeti. What about it?
Well, they found footprints measuring 32 by 15 inches.
Right.
And they've gone, hang on a minute.
Peter Crouch.
Yeah. Either Peter Crouch, Holiday, or a Yeti.
Right.
Because, yeah, that is huge footprints.
And big feet.
Big feet.
You know what they say about big feet?
Yeah.
Yeti
on the loose.
That's what they say.
Yeah. If it is an animal, they're saying if it comes from one specific creature,
yeah,
then it has to be something very bizarre because it's like the dinosaurs era footprints. These are something incredible. Unless someone's gone up to the Himalayas and made their own artificial footprints, you'd be wasting your time doing that because you're not even sure if the Indian Army would find them.
No, let's put a sign up saying Yeti footprints this way.
Yeah. and then they'd smell a rat, wouldn't
they?
And then
they might smell a rat, yeah, depending on how good their sense of smell is. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Right, so the Yeti exists. And what is it like? I always think of Yetis, I think like 10-foot tall, hairy creatures, basically, a bit like a Wookiee.
Where you think
is it
so,
a similar
yeah,
thing to a Wookiee?
Like that, yeah.
A Yeti?
You're pretty like a Bigfoot, yeah.
Are they part of the same family, the Wookiees and the Yetis?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Somehow related. But yeah, in 2008, two men in the United States said they found the remains of a half man, half ape. But eventually that was revealed to be a rubber gorilla suit.
See, that's the point, isn't it? I mean, 33% of Americans think they've been abducted by aliens or something stupid like that. So, you know what? You can't really believe anything that happens over there anymore.
True, yeah.
So, I don't know. A Yeti?
And they thought they found Yeti samples in 2017 as well, but they turned out to be bears. But these apparently are so big that they couldn't be bears.
It's funny, you know, I was listening to the radio the other day and they were talking about this house that was haunted. Do you believe in haunted houses?
No.
No? You?
Yeah, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. They were talking about a house that was haunted and they got the exorcism. They got somebody to come around and do an exorcism.
Yeah.
And they asked this woman, I said, is the house not haunted anymore? She goes, no, it's still haunted, but it's much calmer than it used to be, right? Much less. And I thought, we only get haunted at weekends, do you know? In fact, basically, they also said that the ghost or whatever you want to call it, the poltergeist, is behaving a lot better. So essentially, the priest has turned up and has gone, look, you can stay, but behave. All right? We've all got to live in the same... Well, not live, obviously, in your case. We've all got to be in the same house. I found it interesting.
So he just spends most of his time just keeping himself to himself and every now and again just lets them know that he's still around.
He makes tea now for them. Yeah. if you're making one, I'll have it. Bring some tea in, it's nice. Yeah, does cooks dinner once in a while.
Or maybe what he's done is actually Hoover's. Banished a disruptive one. There might have been a disruptive one in the house.
Well, yeah. And the friendly ghost has banished the other one.
Yeah,
well,
that sort of thing.
The priest has come in and got rid of the rowdy one.
The priest, yeah.
But there was a house in the East End where the people were living in it and it became a tourist attraction because stuff would happen in there. Stuff would happen. You're looking sceptical, Jamie.
I know, but you do always hear these stories and I don't have an explanation for them.
No, like, that's right, because it's unexplainable.
Things just come up off the table and fall. What have you seen, Luther?
I've seen it happen. There's stuff being thrown across the room, all right?
Yeah, but that was Graham Taylor the whole time, wasn't it? It's a teacup. That's what it was, mate. What are you doing, Blissett?
I've been at the end of one of them,
stop
mate.
Stop missing chances.
Happened at Cardiff.
That's what I mean.
Well, who did it at Cardiff?
Graham Taylor. At Cardiff. We played at Cardiff. We were in the third division at the time. We're going really well. I think we were top of the league at the time, and Cardiff weren't doing very well. And we didn't score. How we haven't scored first, I don't know. There's so many people had opportunity to score. We didn't score. So we've come in at half time, and we looked up as we're coming off, and he's not on the bench anymore. That means we think, oh God, he's in the dressing room waiting for us. So we've all gone in, and the dressing rooms are like tight like this, and they're bench in the middle. So we've all sort of sat down, very quiet. And he's come, he's obviously walked over, leaning on a table like that, with both arms on the table, you know, on chin over. And he's gone, what the is all that? And as he's done that motion there and swept all the cups of hot tea all over the place.
Oh.
Hot tea. And we're all sat there. And if you see, it's one of those comedy sketches, if you saw it, you wouldn't believe it. You sat there and we're all sat there with hot tea dripping off us. We've got our suits and everything hung up on the things behind us. And that's all covered in tea. And we all sat there, not the flinch, not even in the hot tea.
Everyone was terrified.
It's so quiet. I'm like,
how'd you play in the second half?
Not a lot better.
No. Well, you didn't have your tea,
it ended,
you?
Ended 0-0.
Really? Strange
faces. Game, but scolded faces and have to dry clean all our gear. It was funny. As you do as footballers, we just had to laugh about it afterwards.
Right, but not at the time.
Not at the time. No. We did, once we got on the coach, we had a little laugh about it on the bus.
Fair enough. Well, that was a wide-ranging conversation, wasn't it?
Was.
Yes, to haunted houses, to Graham Taylor.
throwing tea about. You introduced that very well. That was very well done.
Thanks for listening to the Ian Stone Comedy Breakfast Podcast Edition. I'm back every weekday morning, 6:30.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.